Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 26th. I'm Ray Graff. With most schools nearing the end of their spring semesters, planning for college is the focus of today's program. Also, the New York State Legislature recently approved a free tuition program for middle-class families in New York. We'll have more on this from Linnell Engelmeyer, who helps prepare students for the college experience. Give us a call now if you have a question. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Again, it's 800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our phone number here is 800-348-2551. We talk getting ready for college with Linnell Engelmeyer coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. With the summer nearing, many students and families are looking at their higher education options, and there has been some development or two for those folks in New York State. The legislature recently approved a free tuition plan for state colleges and universities. We'll discuss that at more with Linnell Engelmeyer today. Linnell has worked for more than 20 years in college admissions and financial aid. She currently splits her time working and volunteering as a college counselor for students from the Capital District and across the country, with an emphasis on helping students find schools that are a good fit at an affordable price. Linnell, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. If you have any question at all, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. It's voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. So you were on about, 5-6 months ago, Linnell?
I think so.
How about these developments since then? The New York State Legislature has approved a free tuition plan expected to start this fall. Families making less than $100,000 a year would be eligible for the program. By the third year, that would increase to $125,000. But one of the caveats that we've heard a lot about is that students who benefit from the plan would have to work in New York after they graduate for the same number of years they have received free tuition. Has this turned your world upside down, Linnell Engelmeyer?
Well, not really upside down, but it's been a topic of kind of consistent conversation amongst my students at this point.
Are they happy?
Nobody has been sad about it. There's also, at this point, some caveats, some important caveats to it, one of which you just mentioned, that you have to work in New York. And there's also still a lot of information that has yet to come out about it. And so I'm still left. I'm what I call cautiously optimistic at this point because I'd like to know a little more information.
I just thought of this. What if you stay in New York, but you can't get a job, as many college grads, when they're first out of college, can't get one? At what point do the state say, well, look, you're not working, pay us back?
And that is exactly one of my questions. Or are there, you know, income contingent repayment options or, you know, things like forbearance if you cannot find a job, you know? So it's a lot of those. You know, I think they've come out with some good sweeping information. But, you know, as the old saying goes, the devil is always in the details. And it's some of those details that are, you know, I would still like to see before, you know, we start really singing its praises universally.
In your normal pre-free tuition line of work, we always talk about early acceptance. Is this the time for that, or is it over?
It is actually over. In the world of the college admissions cycle right now, Monday is the big day. Monday is May 1st.
Yeah.
And May 1st is what is called the universal decision date, or the universal, I can't remember the exact phrase, but it's the date by which everybody everywhere must deposit to their college of choice if they seek to go to a four-year
deposit.
School.
Deposit? How much?
It can range anywhere from $0 to $300 typically. I would say probably $200, $300 is kind of the typical amount.
Okay. Our number here is 800-3, you know, I always used to go for the early rejection. It really worked out.
Did it
really
work well for
you?
Yeah,
that's why I'm in radio today. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Dan in Albany. Dan, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I graduated from high school back in 1961. And back then, the standard was that you didn't apply to more than three colleges. And my impression is that is no longer the case. Yeah, people applying to, in some cases, 10 or 12 colleges. And it seems if you're applying to that many, it really complicates the whole process, and you may not be making your best choice if you've got too much of a candy store there. So I'd just like to get your feelings about that.
Dan, that's an awesome question, and it's so incredibly prevalent today, because I would tell you at this point, I believe the norm, statistically speaking, is somewhere in the seven schools that students apply to. I know of students that have applied to 15 or more, which is something that I certainly don't encourage. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword right now. One of the reasons that that number has grown so dramatically since you applied and since the time I applied is a couple of things. Number one is demographics, but number two is technology. Technology has made it easier to apply to more and more schools. And when it becomes easier to apply to more, it becomes harder to get into them because you're now vying with more people for essentially the same number of spots. So it has become more competitive than what you and I faced. And hence, students often have to hedge their bets, not only in terms of admission, but also in terms of where they will be able to afford. So I do think that there is some very good reasoning that students are applying to more and more schools. I do think that it has become excessive. It's a double-edged sword. I guess I'll kind of leave it at that.
By and large, the guidance counselors, you know, that prepared the applications with the student, you know, they more or less policed it, I believe, back in the good old days, you know. And then, they didn't really allow you to do it. And that was my impression. It wasn't a law, but it was, pretty well enforced.
And again, I think that double-edged sword comes up when you have a family, for example, where money matters, and you need to wait and see what the results of financial aid packages are. If I had a student for whom money really mattered, and they said to me, I'm going to apply to three schools, I would say to them, that may not be enough to really kind of hedge your bets and end up with a place that will ultimately be affordable for you. You may need a little bit more than that, because not all schools fill financial need the same way. Not all of them fill 100% of need. And so it's a bit of a, for lack of a more technical term, it's a little bit of a crapshoot when it comes to both admissions and financial aid.
Dan, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. But I thought in the times that you've been on this program, you can more or less figure out what financial aid you're likely to get well before you even apply.
With some limits. There's, and I think what you're referring to, Ray, are these net price calculators that are on college websites. And colleges have been, every college has been mandated by the feds to put a net price calculator on their website. They're not always particularly easy to find. But if you go onto the college's webpage and into the little search bar and you put in net price calculator, you'll always find it.
Yeah.
You answer a couple simple questions about your family's financial situation, a couple other questions, and it will give you some sense of what you may be expected to pay at that school. It is an estimate. They are doing it on kind of pretty basic information. Mm-hmm. It also doesn't tell you what your family contribution is. That's what happens when you fill out the FAFSA, the free application. It tells you what your family contribution is. If the school comes through and says, we'll tell you what aid we're going to give you, it doesn't tell you, are they meeting your need? Would some other school have met your need better? Mm. And should you then apply to a multitude of schools to see who will offer you the best money given the most complete information? So, yes, you're right. That information is out there, but I would tell you it's not the be-all and end-all because it's not based on enough information.
Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551, the number. Jerry in Red Hook. Jerry, you're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about the scholarship, the new program that went through the legislature. I believe it's called the Excelsior.
Correct.
Program. Now, what year income will they be going on?
Great question.
Yeah, it is a really great question because the answer to this question changed last year. They are using, so first of all, the form that they're using to determine your income eligibility is what's called the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. Any school anywhere in the country that offers any federal or state aid is using the FAFSA. The FAFSA used to use the last full year prior to the year your student went to college. So if you had a student starting this fall, the fall of 17, prior to this year, they would have used 2016. There were some real problems with that.
Why?
And so, well, basically what happened was if you applied early decision, you could only get an estimate. You couldn't get a real package. Can you afford it if you don't know if you've got a real package?
Yeah.
So there were some real problems with that. So what happened was the federal government decided to institute, this is my favorite phrase of a federal program, the prior year, which you and I refer to as 2 years ago. The FAFSA now uses the income information for 2 years ago. So my understanding is that New York State, for purposes of the Excelsior Scholarship, is using the same information required by the FAFSA.
Okay, now my son, who's a senior now in high school, when I took a substantial pay cut due to personal reasons after 2015 and 2016,
mm-hmm.
So I was told to, and I did, to fill out, to write a letter to the colleges.
Correct.
To the college he wanted to go to, and they reevaluated the situation, and they actually redid my FAFSA,
correct,
which was done today. Will that affect my Excelsior, and if not, could I do an appeal to the Excelsior? Because my income was slightly over $100,000
yeah.
in 15,
mm-hmm.
but probably about $40,000, $50,000 less in 2016
gotcha.
For personal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Will I be able to use the new FAFSA that they recalculated, or is there an appeal process
okay.
for the Excelsior program like there was for the university?
So the interesting part of your question is that is one of the, you know, I talked about sort of the devil in the details, and that is one of the details that I have yet to see. I'm going to give you, based on my experience, what is my best guess. Whenever you have a personal financial situation that is not accurately reflected on the financial aid form, you do exactly what you did, which is to write a letter of appeal to the school or schools in question and explain it to
right.
them. They have what's called the professional judgment to make a change to your FAFSA. You cannot do that, but they can. My guess is that New York is not going to necessarily look at the changes that the school made. My guess is you are going to have to appeal it separately
okay.
to New York. And what I would do in my appeal to New York is to say to them, the school themselves have already accepted this change.
Makes sense. And this is uncharted waters
yes,
to some extent.
Yes, exactly.
All right, let's take a break. It's 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. And we'll be right back with Linnell Engelmeyer.
Support for WAMC comes from Speight Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward. DLSPECHT.com. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. Lathrop Retirement Communities, communities of older adults devoted to social responsibility and personal and intellectual enrichment, Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, lathrop.kendall.org. Shantz Galleries, Stockbridge, featuring the works of over 50 internationally known artists working in glass, including Dale Chihuly, shantzgalleries.com. And the University at Albany Theater Program, offering individualized education within our student-centered theater major to help train theater professionals for the 21st century, albany.edu/theater.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, and the number is 800-348-2551. Forgot it there for a minute. No, it's 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, joined today by Linnell Engelmeyer, who has worked for more than 20 years in college admissions and financial aid, and a couple of emails that came in at voxpop@wamc.org, Linnell, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Carol. It says, "Hi, folks. Would a 20-year-old who is on her own be able to take advantage of New York's new tuition assistance?"
So a 20-year-old would. Whether you're on your own question becomes a little bit murkier. The federal government has a definition that New York State uses to determine whether or not a student is an independent student. And there's a very strict deadline.
Okay.
And essentially, you answer yes or no to a series of questions. And if you answer no to all the questions, you are a dependent student. One of them is, are you 24 years of age? One of them is, do you have dependents other than a spouse? So do you have children of your own? Are you a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces? Were you a ward of the court? So if you answer yes to any one of those questions, then you are an independent student. If you answer no, and there's a couple questions that I missed, but if you answer no to all of them, then regardless of whether you live on your own or not, the parental information must be provided.
Interesting.
Unless there are extenuating circumstances. I have worked with students in the past where the student cannot live at home because of cases of abuse or things like
right.
that. When it must be documented, a letter must be written to the school or schools in question requesting a what's called a dependency override.
Okay.
But if there's no real compelling extenuating circumstances, simply by virtue of living on your own does not make a student independent.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. If you live on your own.
So I think there were some people in the past who have figured out that if I send my kid out there to live on her own.
And pay all her bills.
But put the money into her account so that she pays all the bills.
I see.
That I could have an independent student that would qualify for more aid.
Oh, I never thought of that.
And unfortunately, that information's a few years too late for you. But a 20-year-old in and of themselves could definitely qualify
mm-hmm.
if the income parental income should they be a dependent student if the income qualifies.
All right, this one is from James, who says, would you speak about adult learning? I'm in my mid-20s, have a bachelor's degree with a minor, with a full-time job in an engineering department, 40 hours a week, but sometimes overtime, sometimes out of town due to work. How would further adult learning work? Most of all, not all classes at my local colleges don't have very many times later than 4 o'clock when I get out of work.
You know, you are, James, you're the reason that online education has really exploded. And the...
Silence your phone, Engelmeyer! How dare you!
So
this is a radio station.
It was on quiet. So you're the reason that online education was created, and one of the words that they use in that field is asynchronous, which essentially means you get to do it on your own time.
Right.
You know, the instructor will say, this particular assignment is due on X and such a date, and they don't much care when you do it as long as it gets done at the appointed time.
Okay.
So that is what I would look into, and I would start with SUNY. SUNY has a robust offering of online courses. There are some other very large. Penn State is a very big purveyor of online courses.
Is the cost the same?
Within SUNY, I believe I don't have a really great answer to that,
okay.
And I should because my own child has taken some online
classes.
Really? Yes.
Do you have trouble with a youngster taking it seriously if they're not in a room?
So that was a concern of mine, and it was not a problem.
Really?
It was not, it had definitely crossed my mind, that it takes a pretty significant amount of self-discipline to be able to do this, because again, nobody says to you, you know, this is due here, this is due there, it lacks the structure that high school does, which she had just come out of,
mm-hmm.
But you know, the expectations were pretty clearly defined, and the dates and deadlines of what was due when was pretty clearly defined. And you then had to just kind of plot it out yourself and meet it. But it wasn't totally unstructured, which I think was perfect.
Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Linnell Engelmeyer is here, and Jessica Newberg is next. Jessica.
Hi. I have a niece who is an independent student, and she's applying to the SUNY system with their joint application. I was wondering if the May 1st deadline, so the universal deadline you mentioned recently, was applicable here. I do know that, like, SUNY Plattsburgh has a rolling entrance option.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great question. And that May 1st is the universal response date, mostly. The caveat there is that for schools that have rolling deadlines, oftentimes their classes are not, you know, they will continue to take deposits until their classes are filled. And frequently, that is after May 1st.
Mm.
So, you know, if it were, let's see, we'll kind of go to the extreme here and we'll pick Harvard. There is very, very, very little chance that Harvard's going to take a deposit after May 1st.
Because they'll be full.
Because they'll be totally full. Their deadline is before then. You know, they've made that pretty clear, and they will be full by May 1st.
Okay.
But for schools that are rolling, and there are a lot of schools that are rolling, and we'll tell you, we take deposits until our classes are filled.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jessica. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551, the number on Vox Pop. Lynelle Engelmeyer is our guest, and I believe it is Gwen's turn. Gwen in Albany, you're on.
Hi, Lynelle. I have another question about the New York State Free Tuition Program.
Mm-hmm.
One of the articles that I read about it worded it something to the effect of students entering school in the fall of 2017. And it wasn't clear to me, and I haven't been able to find anything else. This doesn't exclude existing students, does it?
So I tried to do as much digging as I could for the details before I came on here, and my understanding is that returning students will qualify. What would eliminate a student from qualifying is if they have a first bachelor's degree. So if you said to me, I have a first bachelor's degree, I'm going to go back and get a second bachelor's degree in something else, you can't qualify. It's a first bachelor's degree, no graduate school. You must be full time. That is one of the caveats. And you have to average 30 credits over the course of a year. So you could take that online class if you didn't otherwise, if you hadn't otherwise fulfilled those 30 credits sitting in a classroom. But it has to be full time and it has to be 30 credits over the course of a year, undergraduate, first time bachelor's.
And so, but as far as we know, my stepdaughter is attending Hudson Valley right now. So as far as we know, she should qualify for the upcoming year.
As long as you meet the income characteristics, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Gwen. 800-348-2551 on Vox Pop and Peter in Brunswick, New York. Peter, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. So my impression is that varsity athletics at elite liberal arts colleges, like those schools in the New England Small Colleges Athletic Conference,
mm-hmm.
is a form of institutionalized racism and classism. And the reason I say that is because every one of those schools says, okay, we're going to basically have a quota for the socioeconomically advantaged in the form of a golf team or a squash team or a downhill skiing team. And compared to the general population, a disproportionately large number of students at those sorts of schools do those sorts of sports, and only in general, like, the socioeconomically advantaged can do those sports. And I'm curious if you agree with my impression that varsity athletics in those sorts of schools is insidiously discriminatory.
Okay. I mean, this is not really the topic of the show, although it's a great point. All right, Lynelle, if you want to answer, go ahead.
I probably wouldn't have used the word insidious because I kind of work in this field but there is an element of truth to what you're saying. It requires a fairly significant financial contribution or commitment on the part of a family to have a kid compete at a sport at a high level such that they are recruitable college athletes. That's not 100% true, but there is certainly some truth to it. Ice hockey is a great example. Ice hockey is an incredibly expensive sport.
Yes.
And so to be a recruitable athlete, even at a D3 school for ice hockey, you can pretty well guess that that is a family, usually of some means. So is there an element of what you're saying? Yes. The flip side to that, in fairness to those schools that you're referring to, is that those are the same schools that have made some pretty significant commitments to low-income students. Many of these schools have what are called posse students, which are low-income students. Many of them participate in a program called QuestBridge, which is another very significant financial contribution to highly talented low-income students. So while I don't disagree with what you're saying, I don't think it exists in a vacuum. So
there's a bigger picture.
There is a bigger picture.
All right. Well, thank you for that one. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Diana in Red Hook. Diana, you're on.
Hello. I wanted to ask you, Linnell, about students in terms of the Excelsior Scholarship in New York State. What about students who are either on their own and therefore have to pay their rent and food and all that, or low-income students who have to work to and also go to college? How do you think it affects them that the scholarship requires 15 hours per semester?
That's a great question. And actually, one of the big question marks for me about Excelsior is particularly the low-income student. And the reason that I ask that is this program is a beautiful thing for middle-income families, families who maybe would have won't qualify for a federal Pell Grant, and families who, if they qualify for a New York TAP grant, it will be a relatively small sum of money. You know, for them, this program is a beautiful thing because it's money where there wasn't money before. Where I have some real questions are that low-income student who may qualify for a full federal Pell Grant and a full New York TAP grant, will they just not get the Excelsior Scholarship? Will Excelsior replace some of the TAP? And that has some larger implications because with things like Pell and TAP, you can go part-time. So I have some real questions about it that I haven't quite been able to find the answers to yet. Of particular concern to me are the lower income students on this spectrum. So I guess that's my way of saying more to come.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's I don't think it was a wise choice because you could do 12 in the fall, 12 in the spring, and make it up with 6 in the summer.
You can do that. You can still do that.
No, I don't think so.
Because what I read today, something said very specifically, you could do a January term, you could do, I believe it said you could do a summer term, although perhaps I read it wrong.
Okay, Diana, thanks a lot for that. We will clarify when we can. It's 800-348-2551. Bill in Gilderland is next. Bill.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a question. I'm 64. I've got an associate's degree and wondering if I qualify for the zero tuition to attain a bachelor's.
What would
the process be?
Based on what I have read thus far, I see no reason that you wouldn't, as long as you were willing to go back full time. So you would have to take an average of 15 credits per semester, which would be 5 classes. Or, again, maybe 4 and 1 during a, you know, online during a winter term or some combination of it. But because you have not yet received a first bachelor's, it is my understanding that you would be able to. And what you would need to do in order to determine your eligibility is to fill out the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid.
Really? Wow.
Yep.
And how does one find the FAFSA? Go to the college website?
You can go to the college website. Almost all of them have links to it, or you can go directly to it. And the website, and you have to be really careful because there are some that are really, really close, but not it. And you don't want those.
Okay.
What you want is FAFSA, F as in Frank, A as in Apple, F as in Frank, S as in Sam, A as in Apple, .ed, like education department, .gov.
Okay.
Choose the .gov site if you have to search it.
All right, great. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. So I take it that you speak from experience. You've gone to some of these other sites?
Unfortunately know horror stories of people that have gone to, like, FAFSA.com that promises to fill out your FAFSA if you pay them. And the first F in FAFSA is free.
What a scam that is, huh?
Right.
Well, I'm not sure. Our legal department assures me that I can't say that. Maybe it's not a scam.
What? I think they would tell you that they are there to provide a service to people.
I apologize for that.
But that being said, I would tell you that it can be done for free.
But it's a little like cheating if you're capitalizing on the name that people are going to.
Well,
that's my point.
I would agree with that
point. Okay, we will vet this legally, and we'll go back to the phones. Joshua in Albany. Joshua, you're on.
Hey, thank you so much. Now, my call, not so different than the previous gentleman, but instead of being 64 with an associate's, I am 27 with a bachelor's. But same question, and I didn't really get to hear what you said. So interested in pursuing a master's and wondering if I would qualify for the Excelsior Scholarship.
Unfortunately, Joshua, you're the easiest question so far, and the answer, sadly, is no. They've made it very, very clear that this is only for people pursuing a first bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. And so because you already have a bachelor's.
I guess maybe I misspoke. I am not pursuing another bachelor's. I'm a master's.
Right. So you cannot be pursuing anything more than a first bachelor's. So anything beyond a bachelor's or a second bachelor's or anything beyond a bachelor's does not qualify.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
And as you've said on previous programs, as far as secondary degrees, you know, master's, doctorate, there is not a lot of financial help out there.
Masters in particular.
Why?
You know, with PhDs and doctoral degrees, oftentimes there's institutional funding. You know, so they'll pay you to be a TA and mm-hmm. do some research and, you know, in exchange for which you go to school for free. Masters, I guess it's, you know, limited resources. You put it into your first undergraduates or your doctoral students. I guess it's making choices about where your resources go. I beyond that, I don't really know.
All right. Our phone number here is 800-348-2551. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. And boy, this program's going along quickly. We'll hit the home stretch right after a quick break.
Support for WAMC comes from Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wines, and spirits. Outdoor seating available. Live music by Buddy McEarns, April 28th, ChesterCommonTable.com. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York. A country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products, and gifts. WaterwheelVillage.com. Carrie Haddad Gallery, presenting Interlock, an exhibit of contemporary paintings and drawings inspired by American pop minimalism. Now through Sunday, open daily, CarrieHaddadGallery.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StonesoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. And Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm, convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires. BedandBowl.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 2:41 on your Wednesday afternoon. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest today, and Linnell has more than 20 years in college admissions and financial aid. Although she looks so incredibly youthful, I find it very difficult. Let's go back to the phones here. Kathleen in Voorheesville.
Hi. I just have a question about the income limits for the Excelsior.
Mm-hmm.
My student who is entering in the fall to a state college, we're divorced, and I'm wondering if his dad's income is included.
Do I assume that your son lives with you over 50% of
the
time?
He lives with me. I'm the primary parent.
Okay.
On the FAFSA, really only my information went in. It did include some elements of child support, which will end before he goes to college.
Okay. So my understanding is that that New York State, in determining eligibility for the Excelsior Scholarship, is using the FAFSA. And as mm-hmm. such, it would be your income information only. Now,
great.
Here's
there's some advantage to making this little amount of money.
Right, there is. And the other thing that I will just tell you, you know, kind of keep a heads up on, and that is that if your child support, I'm not 100% sure how child support's being factored in quite yet, but if that is being factored in and it ends this spring because he's graduating from high school, then you should.
Yeah, it will end in August. That's what we did for my daughter.
Okay. Then if that is going to throw you over the income limit, you should contact the institution in question and let them know it ends in August.
Okay.
Very good.
All right. Thank you very much.
Kathleen, thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. I'm losing my mind. I can barely remember the number. I say it 900 times a show. And the problem is when I think about it, then I forget it. Something very wrong here. This email came in from Eliza. Any good recommendations for scholarship opportunities? What are students' chances of actually landing any scholarships? And how much time should a student dedicate to trying to obtain free money for school? Well, three questions there.
And I can answer one and three pretty easily.
Okay.
Question number one, where to look? There are two places.
All right.
The first place to look is on the web. There are several internet search services for scholarships.
Yes.
One of the ones that a lot of my students use is called Fast Web. F-A-S as in Sam, T as in Thomas, W-E-B. Fast Web, I believe it's .com. But it's just a scholarship search database. There are several others out there that are all equally as good. And you key in some characteristics about yourself. It tells you which ones might match. The other place that I would absolutely look is the high school guidance office, the high school counseling office, because they keep a repository of the local stuff.
Okay.
And they will also often advertise it. As far as how much money, how much time, it really depends on the student. I have had students, I had a student go to an Ivy League school for $15,000 because they got so much outside scholarship money.
Great.
That is pretty rare. But I have had students where it does happen.
Okay.
So, you know, I would say I can't really answer that part.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you did very well. Let's go back to the phones and Jordan in Niskayuna. Jordan, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I was wondering, I'm taking a semester off at SUNY Albany, and I was just wondering if I joined in the spring, how would the year for 30 credits work? Like, if I joined in the spring, would that be is that a smart-ish idea?
That's a great question, and that's one of those things, that's one of those details that I've not seen yet, although I am guessing that there should be a provision for you to complete 15 credits in a semester. I would certainly double-check that, and don't go by what I've said because I haven't seen the details on that yet, but you are clearly not the only person in that situation that they will encounter, and so I'm sure if there's not a provision for that already, there will be one soon.
All right, and one more question. You were talking about the summer. How does summer factor into this?
Well, we're not exactly sure.
Cursory understanding was that you could use the summer to help you reach that 30 credits. The caller had said that she had read something different. So I can't answer that definitively. You know, new information is really kind of coming out on this on a pretty regular basis. So that's one of those things that I can't quite answer
yet. Okay, and we'll find out, I would say, sooner rather than later on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Matthew in Athens. Matthew, you're on.
All right, quick question. The income limit, is that gross or net?
It is the adjusted gross income on your federal tax return.
All right, after all our said and done deductions?
Yes.
The adjusted gross.
No, it's the adjusted gross, so I
think that's before deductions.
I think that's before deductions.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then if it's gross, we're not making it then.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, you know, I assume gross would be, if you have pre-tax health insurance, then that would not be included
that
in your adjusted gross.
That is correct.
All right.
Correct.
Well, Matthew, thank you, and good luck getting under the wire there. Stan in Poughkeepsie. Stan, you're on.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling on behalf of my daughter. She's pursuing a degree in the external university. She's a teacher's aide in the Head Start program. She's within two or three course of completing her degree in early childhood education. Unfortunately, my wife and I aren't in a financial position to help her. Is there some way she can qualify for some aid?
I assume she's under the age of 24.
No, she isn't. Unfortunately, she's 35.
Okay, so actually, in this case, that's fortunate because she would qualify as an independent student. It should look at her income only and not yours. You know, worst case scenario, there is a part-time scholarship that the state has come out with for students who can only go part-time that might be worth looking into. The TAP and Pell can be used for part-time students, depending on what her income is. So it would definitely be worth her while to fill out the FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid, and see where she lands. Worst case scenario is it sounds to me like she could qualify for a student loan, which, while maybe not the most appealing option, at least has some favorable characteristics to it relative to some private or outside loans.
Yeah, she's within 2 or 3 months of completing her degree. And, she's going to be employed in the state of New York, going to continue, hopefully, as a teacher in that start program.
Okay. And in that case, there may also be some loan forgiveness provisions in there. So I would definitely fill out the FAFSA and pursue the Excelsior, or not the Excelsior, but there is a part-time scholarship on there. I believe if you go to the New York State Higher Ed website, I think that's where I read about that.
All right, Stan, thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Douglas in Saratoga. Douglas. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Yes, my daughter is accepted to a four-year school in Massachusetts. We did the FAFSA, and she is eligible for about $3,500 in subsidized and unsubsidized student loans. She's been accepted to the school. Is there any format for a letter to a school asking, can you do any better or anything like that?
Is this a public institution or a private institution?
No, it's MCLA.
Okay. So private institutions, because they have more of their own institutional funding, you're more likely to get a more favorable response than at a public institution, which has a lot less of its own funding. And basically, a letter of appeal is simply that, happy to be accepted, really want to go here. Generally speaking, the letter needs to be more than just this isn't enough money. It has to be a reason why. So, for example, if the expected family contribution, as determined by the free application for federal student aid, is completely unrealistic for your family because of some extenuating circumstances you weren't able to convey, this would be the spot you want to convey that. So you want to say, we can't contribute X dollars because we're caring for an elderly parent and had to make accommodations to our home or something like that.
Yeah.
This is where you would want to explain that with, specific dollar amounts.
Understood. And just quickly, the unsubsidized student loan they're offering through the school, is that typically of an interest rate that is compatible to a private loan, or is it better?
It usually depends. That both the subsidized and the unsubsidized student loan interest rates are set once a year in July based on the T-bill rate plus some fixed percentage.
Okay.
Understood.
The nice thing about them is that they're capped, and they will never go above 6.8%, it's 6.something%. The private loans, even if they have a better interest rate on the surface, generally speaking, have no cap or have a very high cap.
So you're not going to get a fixed rate?
On a private loan, not that I am aware of.
Okay. Let's go to Darren in Fort Plain. Darren. Why, hello, Darren.
Yes, thank you very much.
There you are.
Yes, thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
She alluded to it earlier about the part-time study, but just wanted to get further insight as far as one who's seeking a master's degree online in New York State, or I guess anywhere practically since it's online. What types of scholarships or grants, financial aid, where should I be looking for those resources other than my own employer? Are there any federal or state grants available to me?
And masters are the toughest, right?
Masters are tough. At bare minimum, as long as the degree is from an accredited institution, you can use some student loan funds to cover it. And the student loan limits for graduate degrees, including a master's, are higher than those limits at the undergraduate level. I would say as long as your degree is from an accredited institution, so if it's from a SUNY, if it's from a University of Maryland, Penn State, which are some of the other big online providers, you should at bare minimum be able to use a student loan to cover those. It can't hurt to look in a scholarship search database, and I believe it will give you the opportunity to say that you're going for a master's degree. I don't know how much luck you'll have with that, but, it doesn't cost you anything more than a little bit of time to look.
Thank you. And I also have a three-year-old. What type of steps should I be planning now for financial aid and college?
Oh, great question.
Yeah. So my suggestion for your three-year-old is to put away whatever little bit you can now in probably a 529. That, I think, is probably the most common vehicle used. I'm not a financial planner. That's always kind of my disclaimer.
Yep.
But a 529 is really the most common tool for saving. That is probably the best one at this point.
All right, Darren. Hey, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. We appreciate the call. But when you're going for the needs assessment or whatever they call when you have a 529, it's not held against you, but they certainly count it, right?
Well, so yes, kind of. Yes, they do. There is a, and I'm not telling you, I'm not going to tell you anything that you couldn't look up, though some people will probably cringe at the fact that I'm saying this on the radio, is the fact that according to the FAFSA, if the 529 is not in the name of the parent, so for example, let's say it's in the name of a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle, it doesn't actually get reported on the FAFSA.
What a scam.
Now, the CSS profile, which is a supplemental form used by a lot of private colleges, will ask that.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But the FAFSA itself will not.
Very interesting. Well, thank you for that inside baseball. Neil in Pine Bush. Neil, you're on.
Hi. I had a question. You kind of answered it about the net and the gross pay, but what's the difference if I'm going to have three kids in college at once? We were kind of overachievers and had three kids in 2 years.
Nice work. I'm right with you there.
So what is your question?
Well, for the Excelsior program, it's that doesn't matter how many kids you have in college or entering.
My understanding with the Excelsior is that it is based on adjusted gross income and does not factor in number in college, at least based on what I've read so far. And just as a quick note, we've talked about that income limit for the Excelsior scholarship being $100,000. It is actually being phased in over 3 years, and after the third year, that income limit will go up to $125,000. So it's $100,000 for this coming year, $110,000 for the following year, and $125,000 for the third year, at which point it's fully implemented.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Neil. We appreciate it. Over to Mokhtar in Albany. About a minute here, Mokhtar.
Hi. A very quick question. I'm from Africa.
Africa.
And I stopped my schooling in Africa while I was in high school.
Okay.
And right now, I would really want to know what is the process for me to go back to school.
So I give you a lot of credit for pursuing it. Probably the best thing to do would be to think about what you wanted to pursue and start to talk to the admissions offices at those institutions. I think that they will be able to give you the most direct, useful information. I think anything I give you is going to be more general.
Yeah.
I would say call some of the schools that offer the kinds of things you want to study and sit down and talk to them. They will have people there to help you.
And my last question is, like I'm blind, is it going to be unusual for me to be able to go back to school?
So he's blind. Is it going to be unusual for him to go back to
school? Okay, so I have worked with students who are blind. I have a student right now who's in college who's blind. So the visual impairment alone will not preclude you from doing this. In fact, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, the school will make reasonable accommodations. And I've had students be very successful
Good.
At that.
All right. Well, thank you, Mokhtar. We appreciate it. We're about out of time here. Lenella Engelmeyer, how do people find out more about what you do?
You know, I'm on Facebook.
Now you seem very vague about this.
That's probably the best way. I've actually kept busy enough without ever kind of advertising and,
really?
And putting a website out there and things like that. So
plus, no one can spell Engelmeyer. Nobody
can spell Linnell or Engelmeyer.
Exactly.
So it's a pretty easy way to hide.
All right.
However, you know, that being said, I'm Engel at nicap.rr.com. Engel is E-N-G-E-L. So if anybody has any questions, you can always reach me there.
You've been on the show 30 times, and I'm just figuring out how to spell your name. Well, very nice to have you here, and we'll see you. When's the next big time we should have you back?
You know, probably the fall.
Okay, so fair enough. Have a lovely summer, and we'll see you in the fall.
To you, too. Thank you very much.
Support comes from Union College Concert Series, presenting pianist Jeremy Dank. To close its 2016-17 season, he performs a program traversing the history of Western music from Michaud to Ligeti and back, Sunday, April 30th, 3 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. At Albany Parking Authority, offering more than 5,000 public parking spots in Albany. ParkAlbany.com for on-street and garage options. Thanks again to Linnell Engelmeyer, however you spell her name, for being here today. Thanks to Zach Malloy. We spell him top-notch. Great job as our engineer. Your phones are answered by Carol Lapani. Our producer is the wonderful Jim Lavoulis. I'm the wonderful Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh my gosh, it's the wonderful gardening show. Stand by now for news.